Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. The topic that we have in front of us is very vast. And if one started to look at it empirically, I think one can get drowned in the numbers. So that's why I thought I will just address one particular issue, which I think is important because it speaks to the need for fiscal consolidation and one key argument which was made a lot at the time during the crisis. And I think this is perhaps useful as an initial entrance into the discussion. Should I hit here F5? Yes, okay, it actually worked. So as I said, I will not address the entire topic, but just try to go into a couple of, I think, ancillary issues which are, in my view, central to the debate. The first one is, as you know, there was a debate during the crisis, can austerity be self-defeating? And there I wanted to make some very basic considerations which do not depend so much on the model, on the specific circumstances, but I think that's very important to keep in mind. And then the next question is, again, a very difficult one, when one does want to start austerity or fiscal consolidation. And here I will just provide very few indications. And then I will finish with, I think, what are the research themes which remain to us in our specific situation today in Europe. So the first one, can austerity be self-defeating? Now, I think you all know the chain of arguments, which was quite simply, we have a crisis, a financial crisis, and therefore we might have many consumers who are financially constrained, and therefore in our models, the so-called non-recording consumers who depend on their current income will be more numerous, more important, and therefore fiscal policy should have a stronger impact than usual. And the multiplier could well be in excess of one. And if that's the case, simple arithmetic tells you that if you have a deficit of 1% of GDP, but then GDP goes up by more than 1%, actually the debt-to-GDP ratio can go down. Right? So austerity could be self-defeating. And this was, I think, used in a context, a very specific context, of course, when they had a financial crisis, when there was supposedly a link between the risk premium and the debt levels. But the context was very much, we need that now. And actually, it's not only beneficial for income, but also good for debt sustainability. Now, in the context of the crisis, the thought was you do a big fiscal stimulus to offset a temporary shock, and then later you take it back. Right? But the key thing that comes immediately out, and that I don't many people didn't recognize, was that you have first a positive shock to income, the multiplier works up, but the multiplier also works down. Right? So what is the net effect? And I want to present you some very simple calculations to show what you can expect. And the basic point is quite simply that even if you have a temporary deficit, temporary meaning start with zero deficit, go into deficit, and go back down, then in the end, logic tells you income should be more or less the same, but the debt level higher. Right? So that in the end, you are left with higher debt levels. Let me just show that in a very stylized, I hesitate to say model, very simple framework where you show that the multiplier is equal to, where I make some calculations assuming that the multiplier is 2. Right? As a parenthesis, maybe we can discuss it later, a lot of the discussion at the time was also framed in the on the idea that multiplier is now in a crisis very high, so we do fiscal expansion, we wait a bit, and then on the way down, crisis has ended, and therefore the multiplier is lower. Right? We can discuss that a little bit later. Is it actually visible? Yeah. Okay, so what I did here is I just took a very simple model where you have a debt to GDP ratio which is equal to 1. Initially, no deficit. Income doesn't grow. Does it have a pointer here? In the middle? No? That was bad. No, that was... Okay, no. Okay, anyway. Yeah, I think there should be a pointer somewhere here, but... But where is it? Well, okay. Anyway, so what you see here is that when you run into deficit for one period, the first shot is that the debt ratio goes down, as predicted, the multiplier is 2. And then, however, when you then take the deficit back, so if you consolidate, it goes up again, and you are left then with a debt to GDP ratio, the blue line, where the right-hand ending is slightly higher than the left-hand starting point. So it is true, yes, you have self-defeating austerity in a certain sense, but it is true just in a very short time period. Now, what happens if you just consolidate a little bit later, right? And let me just show that into two steps, first a little bit later and then if you want the Japanese scenario. So let's assume here I have kept the deficit up for 3 periods. Again, you start with 0 deficit, 1% of GDP for 3 periods, and then you go back down. And here what you see again, you have self-defeating austerity that lasts, I think, for 1 period, maybe 2, depending on the exact parameter configuration. But then, of course, your debt ratios start to go up again. And in this particular case, when you have kept it for 3 periods and the multiplier is the same on the way going up and the way going down, then at the end, your debt to GDP ratio will be 3 percentage points higher. And then the limiting case is, of course, Japan. Now watch out, the scales are a bit different. Where again, at the beginning, you can claim to have a self-defeating austerity. But then every year, what happens is that you add a little bit to the deficit. Sorry, you add a little bit to the debt level because you have a deficit. But GDP no longer grows because there's no further stimulus. And then, of course, what happens is the debt-to-GDP ratio increases as long as you keep the deficit. So the first point is very simple. Yes. In the short run, it might be counterproductive, but in the long run, which is, after all, what happens, what matters for financial markets, you can consolidate. And that is a very simple context based on very simple considerations, which are independent of the specific model you might want to have, whatever multipliers you have and whatever complicated interactions between interest rates, GDP, and income, and so on. Which is basically that the deficit is a flow, right? And permanent deficits lead to a flow increase in the debt level. And then that, according to our models, at least the GDP growth is a function of the change in the deficit. Right? If you just keep the deficit constant, GDP doesn't grow anymore. So once you have jumped to a new level of deficit and keep it there, then basically you have a debt to GDP ratio which increases forever. That's the general theorem, I think, which you have to keep in mind when discussing about, as I said, self-defeating austerity and the idea in general that you shouldn't consolidate, or at least not too early, because it might be self-defeating. So the second question, and here really I have to be brief because it's a very complicated empirical question, which is, when should you start to consolidate? Now, in principle and theory, you know very well. You say you have a temporary negative shock in the form of the financial crisis. You offset that with fiscal stimulus. And then when the shock is over, you stop. Right? The question is how to recognize. When to stop this stimulus. And there are many indicators you can take. the output gap, employment, unemployment, some people would say beginning of the pressure of inflation, and so on. Now, here the problem is that our old relationships no longer work, or at least they no longer work in the way they used to. The good old Phillips curve, which you used to tell reliably, or unreliably, but still in some way, to what extent unemployment and wage growth, and therefore also inflation, were linked, no longer works. And there are two actually elements which no longer work. One is that the link between unemployment and inflation has changed. And what has also changed is the link between wage, between unemployment and wage increases. That link has changed. And then the link between wage increases and inflation has also changed. So when these two elements no longer work the way they do, it's very difficult to say at what point you should start worrying about inflation. The one measure which I would propose is perhaps the one which is least susceptible to being interpreted and complicated calculations, which is just the unemployment rate. Right? Now, of course, then when you look at the unemployment rate, many people say if you have a long recession, people fall out of the labor market, you have discouraged workers, and therefore the unemployment rate might be artificially low. It's no longer a reliable indicator. So let me take that second argument first, because what is interesting for Europe is that actually the opposite is true as a matter of fact. We have not had discouraged workers in Europe. On the contrary, if you just take the activity rates or the labor force participation rates in Europe, in this case in the Eurozone, it has increased trend-wise over now 15 years, and it has not changed its behavior during or after the financial crisis. Right? A lot of the literature on the discouraged worker phenomenon comes from the U.S. experience. And the U.S. experience you see a little bit there. Right? With the crisis, participation rates go down, and that's one of the reasons why the Federal Reserve has said we are very low unemployment rates, but they're not true unemployment rates because people have fallen out of the labor market. You cannot make that argument for Europe. That's very important to keep in mind, that we haven't had that. And therefore, I would say actually the unemployment rate for Europe perhaps underestimates the degree to which adjustment has already been taken. And if you look at the unemployment rate in Europe, I don't know whether that's visible for you. I have here the euro area and the EU. And you see that for the EU as a whole, at least, we are now back to a level which is very close to the average we had pre-crisis. And in terms of employment rates, which I don't show here, we are also back basically to where we were before. So that means we have to say that either our labor markets have improved considerably, or we have to conclude that the amount of economic slack that we have is not that large anymore. Right? One could, of course, say that it's desirable to get unemployment rates down further. That is quite true. But in terms of thinking about where are we in terms of the need for additional stimulus, fiscal and monetary, then I would say one can make a rather strong argument that we are getting back to the pre-crisis normal. Not an ideal, but a pre-crisis normal, which would say that we can, or that fiscal consolidation can and should proceed. Okay, there are many other angles one can take of that. One can look at the output gap and other things, but my argument would be under these specific circumstances which we are facing today, it might actually easiest just to take the crudest of all indicators, because that then means that your judgment is free of all the additional assumptions you have to make when you calculate an output gap or some other measures of slack in the economy. Okay, And that, I think, brings me also to the unresolved issues, which have a strong bearing then also on the question on should you consolidate, how quickly, and if you want, basically, why. In the old world, pre-crisis, we had an idea that the long-term impact of deficits on the economy was basically close to zero, because when the government crowds out other expenditure, interest rates increase or inflation increase, and somehow in the end we go back down to the level we had before. This crowding out channel is very difficult to document right now, because interest rates no longer move, or at least not move in any appreciable way. And if you want to pinpoint also at Ricardian equivalence, people expecting to be taxed in the future, this also becomes more difficult when interest rates are zero and you have infinitely dated debt. When do you have actually to service a debt? And the same, I think, fundamental change happens if you think about the cost of having higher debt. Again, during the crisis and pre-crisis, it was thought higher debt level leads to higher risk premium. We see very little of that left today. And more importantly, for countries which do not face this risk premium, let's take Germany. What is the argument that higher debt levels would be bad for the economy? I think we need a new approach there. We need to have different arguments than the one we had in the past. And I think that is one of the biggest challenges we face, that we have to try to get to grips with what is the impact of additional debt for government, basically in a zero-rate world. It won't last forever, but it is the world we are facing right now. When the facile argument is always interest rates are zero, cost of debt is zero, so why don't spend something it doesn't cost? Sounds like a free lunch, but our general intuition as economists tells us it's unlikely that it's going to be really a free lunch, but we have great difficulties in pinpointing the actual cost of doing this. Maybe I stop here with these questions rather than answers, and then in the discussion I think we can discuss more the concrete case of Europe. Thank you.